at time of recording, we are very, very close to MLS First Kick Season 25. This is 25 Stories I Made MLS. I'm Ital Ramen.
And I'm Toodle Ramen.
And we are currently on episode number 16.
16.
16.
We're flying through the timeline.
Flying through it.
Yes. We're here to talk about, first, like a little bit of the supporter shield, which honestly I should have probably covered off beforehand.
Have we never said the word supporter shield on any episodes?
I don't think so. I mean, we might have quickly in the Bruce Arena, like how many trophies he's won.
Yeah. Maybe then.
Yeah. And then how that kind of culture kicked off the Cascadia Cup, which then resulted in teams coming into the league. So I know this is going to be really disappointing to you, but I want to go back to 1996.
No, that's fine.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Okay. So, like, 1996 happens, right? And the winner of MLS Cup is...
DC United.
DC United. And it's important to note, I think most MLS fans know this, but if you're new to the sport, unlike other American sports, there are three major trophies you could win, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you have MLS Cup, which is... The main one, the big one, and it's if you win the playoffs after making the playoffs and win that tournament, it's called MLS Cup. The second one is the U.S. Open Cup.
Lamar Hunt.
Yes.
U.S. Open Cup.
And that is a tournament that is, there's no regular season, it's pure knockout, and it's open to every single club in all of America.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty cool. And the third one is this thing called Supporters Shield. Right, and
yeah.
That is given to the team who has the best regular season. Now, the interesting thing about the Supporters Shield is that it didn't always exist. In fact, in the beginning, it did not exist. So DC United won MLS Cup, but the best record during the regular season was actually the Tampa Bay Mutiny.
Wait, really?
Yeah. And there was no, like...
Well, that sucks for them.
Yeah, there was no, like, congratulations of having the best record in MLS. It was just like... You didn't win MLS Cup, right? Sort of like how other sports are here.
At least in America, yeah.
Yeah, in America, right? And so there was a fan that wanted to come up with the idea of creating a trophy that celebrated the fact that Tampa Bay had the best regular season because he was a Tampa Bay fan, right? So he was like,
yeah, we should be remembered for
something. Yeah, and so he goes online and he sees if other fans would agree to... creating a trophy.
This is like 56K dial-up.
Dial-up, yeah, blocking the telephone line.
Yeah.
And Seat agree that, you know, will you fund it? Let's fund it together. And what he found out is that the fan bases wouldn't agree on anything, partly because he wanted to call it the Scudetto. Scudetto is what the champion in Serie A in Italy is called. So he's obviously...
He just wanted the name.
Yeah. And so a year goes by, and another guy picks up the charge. His name is Sam Piron, and he brings back the idea and leads kind of the fundraising for the trophy himself. And by the time he brings back the idea to the internet, he's raised $600, and he's estimated, you know, to make this trophy, we need $3,000. Because will the supporters of MLS fans chip in to make this trophy to give to...
And fundraising is a hard thing to do back
yeah.
then.
Yeah, I mean, this is a league that was... You weren't sure it was going to survive, and you're trying to give money out of your pocket. And so the effort really lifted off when an ESPN broadcaster, so the broadcaster who actually, you know, broadcasted the MLS games... Phil Schoen, I think is how you pronounce it. So Phil Schoen is the dude who, if you listen to BN Sports Now, he's like the play-by-play guy opposite of Ray Hudson that everyone knows by his like crazy kind of voice and demeanor. But he actually, as being a broadcaster in ESPN, he donates money to the cause, right? And then the second thing that happened is like Doug Logan, who's the commissioner of the league.
At the time, yeah.
At the time. Donates money out of his pocket for the cause. So not, even though I think he probably has the power for MLS to pay for all of it, he for some reason pays out of his own pocket.
He's like, humor me.
Yeah. And so they had enough money for the trophy. But then still, it took a lot of time for the supporters of the MLS clubs to agree on what were the rules of who'd win the trophy. Because back then, as we talked about in the episode of MLS having weird rules, there were shootouts, there was points given to like ties, but also there were tiebreakers. So like, how do you actually pick who wins this kind of best regular season?
What do they
go
with, like outright wins?
I think they went with points at the end of the day. Yeah. And so it wasn't until 1999 until they actually physically made the award, and they actually awarded LA Galaxy for their 1998 season. And then they
back then was scheduling different, like it bled into the new year.
No,
like 98 to 99.
No. I think they just finished. They decided in 99 and presented it.
Oh, okay. So yeah, it's like
during the off
for your 98 season. Yeah, there you go. Okay,
and they retroactively gave plaques to DC United for 96 and 97. Oh, no. So Tampa Bay Mutiny.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, the teams were etched on the shield itself. And this is now a major trophy. If you think about it, MLS has fully embraced it. It's a major trophy that you could win. And it's still today given by the supporters. So there's like.
So this is completely fan made.
Yeah. Completely 100%.
I assume that like at a certain point of time after the league started. Here's the thing. I know nothing about how Supporter Shield really started.
I just told
you. So yeah. I know you just told me, but like my assumption would have been, hey man, if you watch the Premier League, the trophy goes to the best team points wise, so we might as well award that too. And I would think that the league would be behind that.
No, it was actual supporters who were behind it.
Okay.
And even today, like the supporters.
Hence the name.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, I still wouldn't have assumed that.
Yeah. The supporters still handed out. Now, in the MLS awards ceremony, they also handed out theirs. So it's a unique trophy in that it's handed out multiple times in a year. Mm. But the supporters technically are still the ones who give the trophy to the team that wins, you know?
Yeah.
Which is really cool, right? And this happens again in terms of supporters creating a culture and then creating actual hardware and trophy out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So in 2001, the rivalry was between Chicago Fire and FC Dallas. Back then it was called Dallas Burn.
Burn, yeah.
And they made a cup called the Brimstone Cup.
So
between the two teams, whoever got the most wins between the two teams or the most points between the two teams wins this cup, and it's given out every year. That same year, the league actually officially makes the Atlantic Cup.
That was between the New York Red Bulls and DC, right?
Yeah. Metro Stars and DC United.
The Metro Stars at the time.
Yeah, and the Atlantic Cup is like the official. They made it official in 2001, but honestly, that rivalry is from day one in 1996, right?
Right.
And so the next year in 2002, supporter clubs for three different USL teams at the time. So Portland Timbers, which is Timbers Army.
Mm-hmm.
Seattle Sounders, which is Emerald City supporters, and the Vancouver Whitecaps, which is the Vancouver Southsiders. They all came together and they formalized basically a 2-foot trophy that goes to the team that wins the most points between whenever two of those teams play each other in USL, right?
Okay.
And that
it's
cup,
kind of Cascadia, right?
It's called the Cascadia Cup,
right?
And Cascadia is the bio region in that area. Basically, that region is called Cascadias. From British Columbia down to Oregon, basically. That's what that area is called. And so they call it the Cascadia Cup. And this is significant because, you know, all three of those teams, even though they're at the USL in 2002, they've been around well before MLS.
Right.
And NASL days, right?
Yeah.
And we talked a little bit about this.
There's a lot of teams that have been around before, like San Jose Earthquakes.
Yeah, and we talked about in the San Jose episode that San Jose started in 1974. Seattle and Vancouver also started in 1974, that same year, and Portland started in 1975. So these clubs are older than all of MLS, even though during that time when they make that trophy, it's during 2002 and they're in USL.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And so a little bit about giving kind of the background of, you know, how they went from NASL to USL. You know, when NASL folded in 1984, all three of those clubs kept going to a certain degree, just like the Earthquakes did. The Sounders actually restarted in 1994, so for 10 years they were not there. And in 94, and eventually they got into the A-League and USL in 2002. And it was bought by a guy named Adrian Hanauer. who is comes from down pillow money.
What does that mean?
Like his family owns the Pacific, family owned the Pacific Coast Feather Company.
Oh, like down pillows.
Down
like
pillows.
Down feather pillows.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like that, his family owned that company that made down feather pillows. Yeah, exactly. And like, I mean, for a really long time. Like that company was made in the late 1800s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So like historical money coming in, right? But he, so he never worked for the company, but he always used money to invest into things such as like creating shops that sell picture frames, pizza shops. He invested in tech companies that eventually sold later down the line. And so he's a business guy and he's from Seattle. So he buys this USL team. And the first thing he starts doing is like, let's look at the finances. Let's start cutting down the debts of the team itself, right? Similarly, the Whitecaps, who were super popular in NASL. In the last year of NASL, or 1983, I think, they just opened BC Place, which is the football stadium.
Yeah.
And they got a game where they were getting 60,000 fans in, like, for an NASL game.
Back then.
Yeah, back wow. then. And so after the fall of the NASL, they actually continued in a smaller league called the CSL, and they were renamed the 86ers, Vancouver 86ers.
Which would be a great name for anybody who works at a restaurant.
Why is that?
You don't know the term 86?
No.
It's basically if you're, like, it's code. Like, if you're out of anything. Like, if we ran out of buffalo wings,
yeah.
It would say in the kitchen, like, 86 buffalo wings.
So interesting.
Yeah, it would be, like, telling your servers not to allow anyone to order that.
So why is it called 86?
There's multiple theories on that. None of them I know enough about to really comment on.
Got it.
Like one I think is like AT-6, which is a type of military weapon, which is one that I've heard, which is like dumb.
Okay.
I don't know. But that's just like...
That's pretty cool.
Common lingo.
Okay. That's good to know. The Vancouver 86ers were called 86 because they started in 1986.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's a good reason.
Yeah.
They weren't eliminating people.
No.
Okay.
No. And so in 2000, they actually then officially joined the USL. And then just like in for the Sounders, in 2002, they were bought by a new owner called Greg Kerfoot, his name. He made his money in computers, and then he bought the Whitecaps. He's also from the area. And when he did, the team, much like the Sounders, was completely in debt. He's a business guy. He actually... funny story is like in the beginning all the employees actually worked out of his home,
like
when he
super
bought
Silicon Valley style.
Yeah. And and it was only three employees,
like that's yeah. Not, yeah. So yeah. There's a sitcom there somewhere.
There's definitely a sitcom there. And the last one is Portland Timbers. After NASL folded, they were like spiritually the successor was an amateur club called FC Portland. And then they officially changed their name back to the Portland Timbers in the late 80s. Fun fact about them, this is Casey Keller's first professional team before he goes to Europe.
That is true.
Yeah, back in the 1980s. And then they eventually joined USL, or what it was called back then, the A-League in 2001. Mm-hmm. Other interesting thing is that they were always playing in the same stadium as a minor league baseball team called the Portland Beavers. And so the Timbers and the Beavers were always owned by the same people,
mm-hmm.
and they changed owners really rapidly. And during this time in the early 2000s, they were actually owned by the Pacific Coast League, which is a minor league baseball league.
A minor league baseball league.
Owned the Timbers and the Beavers.
Interesting.
Because they played in the same park, PGE Park. Back okay. then, right? So those are your three teams. They're revived from 1975 originally out of NASL. They're now playing in USL. They have a strong enough supporter culture where they come together and create the Cascadia Cup, which is very real. And there's a really strong rivalry that's put into place, and it's formalized, right? And significant because the league was kind of late to the game of realizing how important rivalries are mm-hmm. and like supporter culture is.
Right, right, right.
Like think about advertising today of MLS, right? How much of it is visualizations of supporters and TIFOs?
Most of it.
Giant banners.
Most of it, because when you see it, you're like, this is awesome.
Yeah. It's like, It is literally the best thing about the league. You know, like, it's something that's completely unique about MLS in America that doesn't really exist anywhere else. You can't go to a basketball game
Do you mean in the U.S.?
In the U.S.
With the other sports. Yeah. You're not going to see that in an NFL stadium or definitely NBA stadium. Yeah.
Major League Baseball stadium. You're not going to see that, right?
There are, like, tiny things, like, for instance, like, you know, scoring a hat trick in a hockey game, people might throw their caps onto the ice.
Yeah.
And there are some charity ones where they might throw teddy bears onto the ice.
Yep.
But it's like every game, you know, you're looking forward to the TIFO rising up. And every game, no matter what stadium, you're anticipating there should be a supporter section behind goal.
Yeah, and they create the atmosphere.
Right.
It's literally the differentiator for Major League Soccer teams versus other professional soccer teams in the same city.
Yeah.
The number one differentiator for me. Yeah. Right? And so they're kind of late to this idea. It's like, hey, we need to foster this. We need to help grow this. And so in 2004, remember the episode when we talked about the new generation of owners coming in?
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about Dave Checkett.
Was that Colorado or was that RSL?
Real Salt Lake.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so during that same time period, Adrian Hanauer of Seattle Sounders was trying to get into the league with Seattle. And mm-hmm. so they were kind of going behind the scenes. They were going head to head, like Salt Lake or Seattle. And the reason why Hanauer couldn't get the team then is because fundamentally he didn't have the money. One, the expansion fee was like $10 million, as we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Two, the business model, as we talked about, was around creating a stadium, right? So like owning a stadium, owning those things, and he fundamentally did not have that, right? And so Garber, though, I think Don Garber, the commissioner, knew that Seattle probably had potential and has this authentic
soccer culture.
Not only
that, they have a region. So I would think from his perspective, it's like if you get Seattle into the league, then the Timbers in Vancouver will want to get in.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
He's probably, like, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but he probably sees the potential of all of that, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, that region is ripe for it.
Right.
Seattle is a big city all as well. It's a good media market. And you have authentic soccer culture that's already there. You just don't have an owner on his own that has the level of money and capital required to meet that business model.
Right.
So what does he do? He connects Hanauer with people with money mm-hmm. that would like to invest in this league, right?
Okay, yeah.
So the first person he connects Hanauer with is a guy named Joe Roth, who's a Hollywood producer. He used to be the head, I think, of Disney film, one of the Disney film studios. He's produced 70 Hollywood movies. So he definitely has a lot of Hollywood money. He has deep pockets. Side note, he produced mostly bad movies. Like, I went through his, like, entire filmography.
I've never heard of him, so.
Yeah, but because he's a producer, like, no one really knows.
Yeah, no one really looks at who the producer of a thing is.
Yeah, but of the 70 movies he's done, he's, I think, only eight have gotten fresh in Rotten Tomatoes. They're, like, mostly, like, movies like Revenge of the Nerds 2.
Is that, like, a direct-to-DVD?
Like, Revenge of the Nerds 3.
Okay.
You know, like, that kind of stuff. But, listen, he has money. He has deep pockets, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so that checks off one box. The next box is...
Stadium. Yeah.
And so the person who runs stadiums there is Paul Allen. Paul Allen is a co-founder of Microsoft.
Oh, okay.
He passed away, so I guess he was the co-founder of Microsoft, and he... So he has a lot of money,
mm-hmm.
but he also owns Portland Trail Blazers. But more importantly, in Seattle, he owns the Seattle Seahawks, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the Seahawks just opened at that point, like I think in 2001, if I'm right, Quest Field.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And when they opened up Quest Field, they did it with in mind of like, hey, this could be able to host soccer games, right? And so. Then Joe Roth and Adrian Hanauer went to Paul Allen and was like, hey, it'd be great if we can get you to be part of this ownership group. You get, I think it turns out to be like close to 25% of the ownership group mm-hmm. in exchange for us getting access to your stadium for free. And like controlling the revenue system, right? Of which he then agrees. And one of the reasons why, like, they were able to make that connection so quickly is because when Hanauer was running the Sounders in USL, he was linked in with the CEO of the Seahawks at the time, who is Todd Leiwicki.
He's just everywhere.
No, not Tim Leiwicki.
Oh, Todd Leiwicki?
Yeah.
Who was this guy?
Tim's brother. Yeah. Listen, right, man, it's like a small
Tim
world.
Tim and Todd.
Yeah. And so they played some of their games in Quest Field already, so they had that connection. This time they were like, let's formalize it, let's make you part of the ownership group. And now we have an ownership group that has stadium, deep pockets, and local supporter culture already built in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Last thing they added, and probably most famously, is Drew Carey.
True.
Right? And so Drew Carey gets a small percentage of the team. He buys in. But he provides a little level of showmanship and star power to make the bid even better, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he, at this point, now is a no-brainer for MLS to allow the Seattle Sounders in. And at this point, though, the expansion fee is now $30 million, which is higher. It gets getting higher and
it's
higher.
It's like 3 times the amount when they first wanted in.
Yeah, exactly. And it's actually higher than even the David Beckham option was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we talked about.
That was what, 26?
25.
25?
Yeah. And so Drew Carey also adds to the supporter culture two things that I think a lot of fans know. One is that march to the stadium with the marching band.
Yep.
Yeah.
Done it.
Was it cool?
It was super cool, man. It was awesome.
How was it?
Everything that I've wanted to experience at a younger age.
Well, describe it a little bit. Like,
what? I mean, like, one, I mean, I'm not a Seattle Sounders fan, so I covered it up by wearing a U.S. soccer jersey.
Okay.
And then I was with my homeboy, Calvin, who just moved to Seattle.
Yep.
So we're going to the game together. We do a march. I'm a drummer, so I appreciate the marching band up front. Everyone's just kind of like chatting and hype for the game. At one point, we stopped at a square. I'm totally forgetting the name. I've only been to Seattle once. But like, we stopped at like a square in the middle of the city somewhere. And then, you know, the marching band did something cool there. They also had like merchandising stuff going on. And a bunch of stuff with the supporters section was leading a lot of things. But which was like foreign to me because I was, you know, visitor.
Yeah.
But it was a crucial part of the experience, I think.
Yeah.
Because when we got to the game, it was just pure enjoyment. And I forget who the Sounders played, but they like won 4-0.
Yeah.
So it was just like a party atmosphere.
Yeah.
And at Quest Field for like 2 hours.
It's one of those things you'll probably never forget. And if you're you've never been to a soccer game and that's your first experience, like, you're probably hooked, right?
Yeah.
It's critical. Like, the supporter culture is super critical. The other thing he implements is, like, every 4 years, the supporters clubs can vote if they want to get rid of the GM. Which is, again,
that's very unusual, right?
Very unusual in U.S. sports. You'll see that sometimes in European.
So it seems like Seattle's fan base has a lot of influence.
Yeah, and vice versa. I think the Seattle ownership realized what made them special is the supporters, and so let's foster that. Let's give them more of a say.
Right.
Let's provide even more rituals to cement what it means to be a supporter of this club, to feel like you're part of the club, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that translated into success. Right. So that
they've
first year.
They never missed the playoffs.
They never missed the playoffs.
Two MLS Cup victories now.
Well, let's talk about even year one. They won U.S. Open Cup their first year.
They've won it a bunch of times.
Yeah. And, you know, up until that point, like.
Also, they've had pretty, like, notable stars, too.
Yeah. But, like, their first year, up until the Sounders came, like, the number one team in attendance was always LA Galaxy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
For a long
time. Seattle crushed it.
Yeah. Like, for a long time, LA Galaxy was the only team that was averaging 20,000 a game.
Mm-hmm.
And then Toronto came, and they always averaged 20,000 a game. They never, because they have a smaller stadium,
yeah,
they never overtook the Galaxy, I don't think. And then Seattle comes in year one, they average over 30,000. They, like, break the ground. Like,
right. They also break records for noise
in the
stadium, too.
The stadium is made for noise, right? And so the success is huge, and it's immediate. And so, and this is in 2009.
Yeah.
Right? And then Garber, I think, is now thinking about teams to come in 2011, and he's like, let me get the next two.
Yeah,
let's, it's like the Monopoly.
Yeah.
Like, I have Atlantic.
Just, yeah.
Let me just get Marvin. Is it Marvin Gardens?
No. Let's just keep going with this and see how badly we fail.
On the Monopoly. You know what I'm talking about.
I know. The three properties. But this, name the yellows.
Isn't Marvin Garden the yellow?
I think Marvin Garden's one of them. But what are the other two?
I don't know, man.
Yeah.
For a game I play all the time, I can't tell.
Look, Garber wasn't just going for Boardwalk and Park Place. He wanted all three.
He wanted three and built houses on them. Yeah. You know, like, and so he looks at Portland and Vancouver, right? Vancouver, the owner, as we talked about, is Greg Kerfoot, and he follows the Seattle blueprint almost to the same, right?
Mm-hmm.
He brings in Steve, I think Lucio is how you pronounce his name. He is a CEO of a data company called Seagate. He also owns a portion of Boston Celtics. And then he also brings in Jeff Mallett, who's one of the leaders at Yahoo at the time, and then an owner of the San Francisco Giants. Money, people who know how to do stadiums, all that good stuff. And then the celebrity investor, instead of Drew Carey, they got Steve Nash.
True.
Famous soccer fan and NBA basketball player from Canada.
True.
Right? And for the stadium, much like Seattle, who didn't actually build a stadium, right?
They
use an existing stadium. It's not soccer specific, but the business idea of owning all the revenues of it still holds true.
Yeah.
The Whitecaps did the same thing. They took BC Place, which we talked about a little bit earlier in the episode where the NASL team played. That's been used for for Canadian Football League. Mm-hmm. They were like, we can use this and control all the revenues. We'll just play in BC Place and then do the same thing that the Sounders are doing, right? So check, check, check. All right, last one is the Portland Timbers. And Portland Timbers, in 2007, they finally are not owned by some sort of baseball group. They're bought by this guy named Merritt Paulson in 2007.
Okay.
He's the son of Hank Paulson, who used to be the CEO of Goldman Sachs. And then was a secretary of treasury during...
Money. More money.
Yeah. He's a secretary of treasury during the Bush administration and the Wall Street crash in 08.
These guys would be great at Monopoly, I feel.
Yeah, I think they'd be great at Monopoly. I mean, you probably don't remember this, but Hank Paulson was the face of the crash. Like when the market crashed?
No,
in 2008. Yeah. Because he was like coming from Goldman Sachs.
Okay.
And he was in the government, and he was overseeing all that stuff. Like, he was definitely the face of it. Anyway, his son, Merritt Paulson, obviously comes from money now, has money. And he buys the Beavers and Timbers, Portland Beavers and the Portland Timbers, together. Obviously, they're always a pair deal. But his focus immediately is really to get the Timbers into MLS. He's not really into baseball as much. So he has the money. Right now, instead of $30 million, now it's $40 million.
Why? How much time has passed?
I think 2 years.
In just 2 years?
Yeah.
Damn.
It's $40 million.
Damn.
But he needs the stadium, right? So they are playing in this park called PGE Park.
That is
combination baseball and soccer. Like, kind of like what NYCFC is doing right now. But he's like, you know what?
At time of recording, they have announced that they have some kind of plan.
Yeah.
For NYCFC.
Listen.
But we'll get back to that later.
Listen, it takes a long time. It
takes a long time.
Coming from a Rebels fan, or if you ask a DC United fan, they waited a long time. So he takes that combination baseball-soccer, and he's like, listen, I'm going to get into MLS. I'm going to turn this stadium into a full soccer stadium. We're not going to build a new one. We're going to get some renovations in here to make it just soccer, and I'm going to sell the baseball team, finally splitting up the two kind of sports teams apart. And then that's what he ends up doing. He ends up getting some public funding to renovate the park into making it soccer specific instead of baseball and soccer.
Yep.
Sells the Beavers. The Beavers eventually move outside of Portland. And so both the Whitecaps and Timbers get into the league in 2011, and now the Cascadia Cup is now not in USL, it's completely in MLS.
Yep.
And MLS actually tried to trademark the Cascadia Cup, of which the supporter fans were not.
Like, no, 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 no.
They were like, no, this is ours. Yeah. And then there was an agreement, basically, that MLS was like, you own this, but we're going to try to protect it from other sports entities from using it, kind of thing. But like fundamentally, it's owned by the supporters themselves. And so, though, at least the Sounders, as you mentioned, like probably the team of the decade, right?
I would say so.
Four U.S. Open Cups, as you mentioned.
Two MLS Cups.
Yeah.
Never missed the playoffs.
Never missed the playoffs.
Since their involvement with the league.
Yep. And they have a supporter shield as well.
Also, in 10 years. Like, yeah, and some, like, maybe other bonuses, like, you know, the sale of DeAndre Yedlin, you know?
Yep.
Jordan Morris being there, so, like, they're important to U.S. soccer as well.
Yeah, some of the biggest signings ever. Yeah. Clint Dempsey signing was...
Clint Dempsey.
Obafemi Martins.
Yep.
They're big spenders in the league. They, I know we said they broke the 30,000 barrier for the first time.
Which opened it up for other teams to do, or yeah, shoot for even.
They were, then shortly thereafter, they got to 40,000. So that's where they are right now.
They set like 40,000 benchmark, I think.
Yeah, in terms of being, and it, like, honestly, it was eye-opening in how big a following could be of MLS, right? And so they're like the true MLS 2.0. Like, if LA Galaxy is your iconic MLS 1.0 club.
I feel like you might have upset some DC fans.
Or DC, like LA from an attendance standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Then Seattle's definitely the 2.0, or Toronto. Probably Seattle.
Probably Seattle, man.
Because...
Probably Seattle because they've had a lot of success on the field.
Yeah. And the attendance is like...
Yeah.
For a long time, they go unmatched, right? And so huge impact in bringing them into the league. Also, the Timbers, big spenders now, have won MLS Cup as well.
Yep.
And they also have great atmosphere. I mean, their stadium is seen...
I feel like they were the ones... I think they had some hot TIFO game.
They have great TIFOs. Explain what a TIFO is if someone doesn't know.
I don't want to, like... I'll just put it in layman's terms.
Layman's terms.
It's a giant banner that the supporters make.
Yeah.
And then reveal at the very beginning of the game.
Yes. And it's awesome.
Like, as the players are coming on the field.
Yep. And they also have Timber Joey.
Mm-hmm. That was, I remember how cool that was when they came out to MLS as a club. And it was just like, what is this?
Yeah.
I don't even care. It's cool.
Yeah. And they created a ritual.
Right.
Again, it's like a ritual. And it's like, it's authentically created by the supporters themselves, right?
Yeah.
And
like,
and
it's not. This is not a rag on you. It's not a bunch of marketing guys.
Yeah, it's not a rag on you.
Coming together and be like, what are the cool kids like?
Yeah. Yeah, you want to foster that. It's authentic.
It's how you end up with like a Pepsi ad debacle. But, you know, it's authentic.
It's authentic. Yeah. And I think for the longest time, if Seattle was known as like the big club, Portland was like, I think Thierry Henry, when he came to the league, he was like, yeah, Seattle's, you know, very well supported. But he's most impressed by the experience at Portland because it sells out every game. It feels like this the supporters are like right on top of you. The TIFOs are great. Like it feels like a European experience, for lack of a better word, right?
Right.
And so those two clubs have one had success on the field. They spend money. They drive the league forward. But also they've brought a level of supporters culture that has been here from the beginning. I mean, the supporters shield and that story and how that started in the first place, and also the original rivalries of like DC United and Metro Stars and Dallas Burn versus Chicago Fire. But I think the Cascadia Cup took that to a different level. Mm-hmm. And they're definitely still the clubs that you look at and saying they're always trying to make the experience better and further kind of grow the supporters' culture in an authentic way, which, again, I can't repeat more than enough, is what makes the league different in the U.S. versus other sports. And so that's sort of the story of the Supporters Shield and the Cascadia Cup.
Awesome. Well, before we move on to sources, in honor of Seattle, Portland, and the Whitecaps, I would like for you to name, off the top of your dome, two green properties on a Monopoly board, and then one powder blue property on a Monopoly board. The two greens for Seattle and Portland, and the one powder blue for Vancouver.
Marvin Gardens?
No, man, that's yellow, dude. That's yellow.
Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania is a green. You got one. I'll give you a hint for a powder blue.
Or Oriental.
Yeah, I was about to say. It's like, you shouldn't say it anymore.
Oriental Avenue.
I don't know another green. Let's just move on.
Yeah.
What are your sources, man?
A Pacific Passion Play by Grant Wall for Sports Illustrated. Sounders New Ownership Changes, an FAQ by Sounder at Heart. Whitecaps Invisible Owner Casts Large Shadow in the Globe and Mail. MLS expected to announce Vancouver expansion team. And then Timbers, there was an article on Timbers.com on introducing kind of Merritt Paulson as a new owner. And all of those are really good in terms of understanding kind of the history of it. Oh, and the last one is A History of Supporter Shield by Ryan Gase for Stumptown Footy.
And from me, the Monopoly thing was the thing for me. I just couldn't wait.
Yeah. Nice.
Anyway, please like, subscribe, do all that good stuff.
Tell your friends. Follow us on Twitter @25_stories.
And we'll catch you next time.
Yep. Bye.